Hey everyone, quick housekeeping note before we start this week's episode of Panning the Stream. We had a weird fluke thing that has never happened in that our recorder, our audio recorder, just stopped recording. It just turned off in the middle of making this episode. So if you hear any audio changes or anything, which you probably will, we haven't heard it yet, but I recorded on my phone as my backup. So it's going to sound a little weird probably, but that's the episode. You should be able to hear everything. Sorry for the audio quality. We will be back to normal next week. Bonkford.
Dan.
How's it going?
Love is in the air.
It is. It's a Valentine's Day weekend.
It is a weekend for lovers.
Yes.
But you know what the real holiday is for single people? The day after Valentine's Day. Because then all the candy is on sale.
Oh, that's the Paul Reichert holiday.
That's
when he goes
Ivy and... That's a superior holiday for sure.
Yeah, yeah. What are the candy holidays? You got Halloween, obviously. You got
Easter.
Christmas. Easter. Actually, a lot of holidays, now that we think of it, have to do with candy.
Yeah, but I feel like Valentine's Day, you know, you have that chocolate association. And Halloween, obviously, candy's a huge part of Halloween.
Halloween has the full breadth of excellent candy. Just everything.
Right.
And it's a beautiful holiday for it. Valentine's Day, you got the chocolate stuff. You got a lot
I love. I love those samplers where you get like a bunch of different chocolates, like types of chocolates.
Those are really good. There's always the ones that I don't like that have like the jelly-ish stuff in there.
I agree, but I really like if you get like the truffle assortment, like the high, like Godiva, that quality is just on another
level.
With
like pecan and caramel stuff in there.
Oh my gosh,
yeah, that stuff's great.
You really can't lose with any of those.
You know what's unfortunate is probably the candy that is most associated with Valentine's Day is the garbage chalk hearts.
Oh yeah, those are bad.
No one likes those.
Did they stop making those?
I bet there was a headline of that, but then it's like, I'm sure six other companies probably started making them. Like, they are ubiquitous at Valentine's Day. They are the ones that you would always get at school when you pass around Valentine's.
Right.
And they're garbage. No one likes the taste of them.
Yeah. I mean, they're really, if you're going to spend the calories on candy, why would you want it to be bad?
Yeah. What is, what are the hated candies of the holidays? I think Easter, you've got Peeps.
I think candy corn is pretty polarizing for Halloween.
Yep. So I think those are you got the chalk hearts for Valentine's Day, you got Peeps for Easter, and you got the candy corn for Halloween. Let's rank those three bad candies. I think candy corn is not that bad.
You know, I feel like I've had candy corn and it just tastes like sweet. It doesn't really have much of a flavor.
Yeah, it's got a nicer texture though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think Peeps are way too like
it's
I feel
fleshy.
Like it's I feel like it's not meant to be eaten. You know,
yeah.
The taste isn't terrible.
Uh-huh.
I think. All told, the chalky hearts are the most unpleasant of all the Halloween candies.
Yeah, they are gross. There's that other chalky, like, circular disc. What are those called?
Oh, the ones that you have to peel off the paper and they have, like, the paper stuck to
it? Yeah, those are bad.
That's just, like...
They're not for eating. They're for craft projects. When I used to work for this small advertising agency that worked a lot with food, and I had to make a big haunted house out of pretzels and candy and stuff, and chalky discs were one of the foremost building components. But as far as eating, they're absolutely terrible.
Oh, are you talking about like the NECA wafer things?
Yeah, those ones. NECA wafers.
I was initially thinking of the ones where it's like a sheet of paper and the little dots. Colored dots where you rip them off. But yeah, NECA wafers are garbage too.
Those dot candies are like the most old school, like a pencil candy piece.
Yes, absolutely.
Like 1920s candy.
Yeah, they traveled through a time portal and somehow sold in the 2000s.
They just taste like sweet.
Yeah.
What is your feeling on these differently shaped Reese's cups? Like there's the Christmas trees, there's a pumpkin, there's hearts for Valentine's Day.
I'm usually into it. The pumpkins are pretty good. They don't screw with the ratio too much. I have not tried the like giant Reese's.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that would be too much screwing with the ratio, but the pumpkins are fine. The hearts are fine. They sell Reese's Thins now, and I have heard some rave reviews about Reese's Thins.
They sound like they'd be really good in the freezer.
Ooh, yeah. You ever have a Reese's Nutrageous in the freezer?
No, but that sounds amazing.
It's extremely good. And, you know, you and I have both talked off mic before about how the most underrated candy bar out there,
Take Five. Take Five,
of
for
course.
Sure.
Of course.
And now it's Reese's Take Five.
I get that. The branding is important there. I think Take Five, everyone likes it, but I don't think the branding is recognizable enough.
I mean,
you throw a Reese's on there.
It's got sweet and salty,
mm-hmm.
caramel, nougat, peanut,
The texture's great.
Amazing texture.
You got the crunch of the pretzel in there.
And also, instead of just one giant log of a bar, you get two tiny bars.
Yeah.
So you can, like, have one, you know, wait a while, forget that you have the other, and mm-hmm. then come upon the other half, and it's just glorious.
Yeah.
But I will say, before we move on entirely from the subject of Reese's,
no.
I feel like the ridges in the traditional Reese's cup
yes.
are kind of integral to that experience. And I think they know that. Why else would they include those ridges? You know what I mean? I find that they're just really pleasurable. And when you get into the funky shape territory, you're kind of veering off base with, you know, they don't have the ridges. They don't have that little paper that covers it. And then occasionally, if you're and I don't have Reese's that often, mm-hmm. so I will say this probably isn't occasionally. This is probably very frequently. When you take the wrapping off of the Reese's, like, there's, like, that center portion mm-hmm. will stick to the...
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't mind that either.
That's part of it.
Yeah, because then you get that, like, secondary mm-hmm. little bit, you know what I mean?
Well, the thing is...
Like, the cereal milk of the Reese's cup experience.
Yeah, yeah. I like the ridges on the Reese's, but I don't think I get to fully appreciate them, because I typically, like, I like peeling the thing off, mm-hmm. but then I just put the whole thing in my mouth. Like, do you do bites?
I do bites.
Yeah. Okay, so you probably get more time with the ridges.
Well, you know what? I would say this for Reese's and probably no other candy. The mini Reese's,
mm-hmm.
I feel, are better than the regular size ones, because you get so much ridge to chocolate peanut butter ratio. There's so much ridge action going on there.
As a ridge lover, I can see why you would prefer that. Mm-hmm. I like the filling, and I think the traditional Reese's is the right amount of the ratio of just, like, it feels like it's packed with that stuff,
right.
whatever that peanut goo is. I don't want to go too much with the giant ones that, like, my dad has.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
I'd rather just get, like, a few normal ones than one giant one.
Yeah, the small ones are great, but I think the ratio is a bit off.
Well, you know me, I'm a crust lover.
Yes.
And when it comes to pizza, the crust is the... And when I say crust, I know some people talk about crust as, like, the base dough. Mm-hmm. And I really like that, too. But I'm talking about the part that a lot of people throw away.
I throw away every crust. If it's not stuffed, it's in the trash.
You know what? You say that, but I think that you do like crust sometimes.
It's fine. I don't dislike crust. The thing is, if you're eating pizza,
right?
You know, you're all in on, like, I'm just going to stuff my face with this pizza and not give a shit that it's unhealthy, you know, junk food.
Right.
So, you have a limited amount of space in your stomach,
okay.
and in terms of how much food you can eat until you get full.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if I have a pizza, I want to put as much of the top-tier stuff in my mouth before I get full.
Right.
And that is the stuff covered in cheese and sauce and possibly some sausage. Maybe some pepperoni.
Well, this has been extraordinarily beneficial to our relationship.
Yes.
Because I love crust, mm-hmm. and I, you know, I could... Take or leave, like, I love pizza, obviously, but when it comes to pizza, the crust is my favorite part. So we are great pizza-eating collaborators in that I will just take all of your crust, and occasionally you will bless me with what Dan and I call crust plus,
mm-hmm.
which is the regular crust with a little bit of either tomato sauce or maybe a little bit of cheese left over from the actual base pizza. That's crust plus. And crust plus is rare, but when I do right. get it, I covet it. So
I have had more than one occasion where I've taken a Uber back from the Comedy Cellar mm-hmm. in New York City, because I usually, after the Comedy Cellar, I've been drinking. It's like 2 a.m. I just want to get some pizza from Ben's or Joe's. And I'll get, like, 3 slices, and I will put all the crust plus in a greasy bag,
mm-hmm.
and I will sit in a Uber. Sometimes they don't have bags, and so I just have to have a styrofoam plate with all this, like, greasy crust on it to take home to you, and you're asleep, and I put it in a little Ziploc bag and put it in the fridge so you can have your crust plus.
I love it. I love crust plus.
Things get dicey if it's stuffed crust, because that's my favorite part.
That's, you know what, I'd rather not, if I have to choose between regular crust and stuffed crust, I'd rather not have stuffed crust. I will say I appreciate when sometimes they put, like, the garlicky, buttery mm-hmm. mixture of
a little, like,
sometimes.
brush of
yeah,
butter.
That I'm into, because I love garlic stuff. But yeah, stuffed crust, you can just keep that for yourself.
Okay. I'm a big sucker for pizza gimmicks.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have noticed in our years together that I watch a lot of wrestling, and during wrestling there tends to be a lot of pizza commercials.
Oh yeah,
and
demographic.
Oh yeah, and they know how to shoot that pizza in the most alluring way to people like me.
Oh, yeah.
And I have fallen prey to many a disappointing pizza gimmick.
Well, there was the giant Cheez-Its, which you did get. And
those
you
are
did
pretty good.
You kind of, they were exactly what you thought.
That was a saga. That was like a Homer's Odyssey saga to get those Cheez-It pizzas.
Yeah,
yes.
And then you, like, tweeted about it or something, and that was Pizza Hut, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Pizza Hut was like, oh, I'm so sorry you went through that. Here's a coupon for a free pizza.
Yes.
But, like, it's free, but it's delivery only. So you have to reach a minimum, which surpasses the
yes.
amount of free stuff. And then when you add on the delivery fee, it ends up being like $30 for a quote-unquote free pizza.
This was an emotional roller coaster for my father. bother that you were in Kansas City to see, because they sent me these things because they were like, oh, we're so sorry you didn't get the Cheez-It pizza. So here's two codes for two, like, free large pizzas. Right. And I was like, well, that's great. It doesn't change the fact that Pizza Hut doesn't deliver in Manhattan. So right. I wasn't able to use it. But then I was like, ah, perfect. My dad always hates spending money, and he loves pizza, mm-hmm. and he loves free stuff. So I'll surprise my dad with these free pizzas when we go back to Kansas City. And so we go back, and we had a night where we were hanging out with my dad, my sisters, and I pulled out that Trump card. It was just like, hey, Dad, how would you like a couple free Pizza Hut pizzas? And his eyes lit up like Christmas morning. He gave me a hug and said, son, I finally love you.
Yeah, for one moment at least, he was proud of you.
Yes, absolutely.
One fleeting moment.
Yes, and I typed in all the stuff, and turns out you can only use one code at a time. Uh-huh. And yes, we had to meet the minimum and then do the delivery thing. So we had to, like, tack on top of the large pizza, we had to tack on $10 worth of, like, cheesy breads and stuff like that, and then the delivery fee, and then the tip, and everything. It wound up being, like, a $23 free pizza.
There was that saga. There was the Little Caesars nacho cheese pizza. Which, yes. I mean, that just sounds so gross to me. But
sounds beautiful to me.
You were, like, sweating furiously when you saw that commercial. And you ended up ordering it, but you placed the order to the wrong Little Caesars.
No, I placed the order to one in Manhattan that doesn't do delivery. So they made the pizza, and it sat there.
Yeah, and you tried calling, and they just never picked up.
Yeah, it was great.
And then you ate it, and it gave you, like, the most violent, like, stomach issues for, like, a full, like, 48 hours.
No, I had to pay for the one that was supposed to be for takeout, and mm-hmm. that just sat there and was never resolved. Mm-hmm. And then I had to order delivery from another one in Harlem that brought
it by. Because you wanted it so
bad. Yes, and so I basically wound up spending, like, $35 on one personal nacho cheese pizza that made me just spend a lot of time in the bathroom.
And then in recent weeks, there's been ads for this Alfredo pizza.
It literally stopped me in my tracks.
Yeah, you were about to get up to, like, get a drink or something, and then that commercial came on, and you stopped, and you looked at it. Like, when we teased our dog Razor with, like, the promise of FOOD, mm-hmm. he just, like, stops in his tracks and stares at us seriously. That's how Dan was at the TV.
Yeah.
Like a deer in the headlights.
Well, speaking of pizza, as soon as we're done with this podcast, we're heading to a highly recommended pizza place here in Stamford, Connecticut, the old Colony Grill.
Yeah, with bar-style pizza, really thin.
Hot oil pizza. Mm-hmm. I like all these words a lot, so I'm looking forward to eating some crispy, thin pizza that comes highly recommended.
Yeah, that does sound very good.
And we're spitting distance in New York City, so I bet Connecticut knows how to do a good pizza as well. Ooh, I had that one pizza recently that was extremely good. Did I order that? Oh, yeah, yeah, the Greenwich pizza.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that was, like, the thin crust kind of.
Yeah, that was super good. There's good pizza up here. Mm. Yeah, Connecticut, you're all right.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out the only bad pizza I ever had, I feel like, was in San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco doesn't know how to do pizza. San Francisco's bad at everything, specifically pizza.
I mean, because we got Papa John's a lot, which is fine. I mean, honestly, Papa John's, Domino's, Pizza Hut, they get a lot of hate, but they're fine.
It's fine.
It tastes really good.
That is what I know as pizza, is those three brands.
But then
know?
There was this pizza joint on Terraval that was like this small,
yes.
It was like the only by the slice place, but it was this weird, it's like they used a weird kind of cheese and the pizza was so thick.
It was like gummy?
Yeah, like you had to eat it with a knife and fork.
Yeah, and it always took 45 minutes to get one slice
of
pizza.
And it was always like this family screaming at each other.
Yes,
there.
Yes. San Francisco, just a terrible city.
But the beach area was nice.
Right? Actually, I say that, but yeah, there was really nice things.
I was thinking about this somewhat recently, because you mentioned that there in San Francisco. If you're ever there in the sunset, there's this place called Andytown Coffee Roasters, and I assume they're still there. It's been a while since Dan and I lived in San Francisco, but they make this drink called the Snowy Plover.
Mm-hmm.
It's named after this local bird that's endangered and kind of exclusive to that area, as far as I know. They look like giant seagulls,
mm-hmm.
And they're all over the beach there. But the Snowy Plover is, as far as I know, it's espresso, Pellegrino, and their house-made whipped cream. And it all kind of mixes together, and it's so delicious. It's like kind of tart and sweet and creamy, and I've desperately wanted something like that, but, you know, no place really would offer something like that. I mean, it's very specific. But if you ever have the opportunity to get that and you like those kinds of flavors, I highly recommend Andytown Coffee Roasters.
I'm not even a coffee or espresso guy at all. I pretty much just have iced coffee, but I greatly enjoy this as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You were there. And then you get that last, like, bit of it, which is, like, just the whipped cream left.
Mm-hmm.
It's just glorious.
Super good. Yeah.
Lots of food talk today.
Yeah, we're about to go get a nice pizza.
You know what it is? I think when we're in a romantic mood, yes. we're in the mood to indulge ourselves. And food comes to mind. I mean, I feel like there's a close association between food and love because you tend to share food with the people that you love.
It's true. And Valentine's Day, you and I have typically not been like hardcore, like, oh, we need to get each other 90-foot teddy bears and, you know, stuff like that. But we like to, you know, we'll get a dinner together.
You know what? The listeners at home might not know this, but you're just naturally a very romantic person in these sweet little ways. Like, I remember the first time I ever went on a business trip, I was so nervous about it. And when I got home, and this wasn't anywhere near Valentine's Day, but when I got home, I like flew in overnight, got home really early, and Dan was still sleeping because it was the morning, and he like arranged out of Andy's chocolate mints. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
You wrote out the word "I love you," the words "I love you" on the table with these Andy's mints. It was so sweet, and you cleaned the entire apartment, which was amazing.
Well, you leave out the times that like I tried to get you a cake and have you walk into a cake with candles lit. And
that was weird.
I lit it too early, and it was a cake you didn't want, and it was just covered in candle wax.
That was for like my birthday or something.
Yeah.
I was like, Dan, I really don't want a cake or anything because I think we're gonna go out. So I was like, don't get me a cake. And then you got me like this cupcake or something. But, and you know, he lit it like as soon as I got off the train, which is a few blocks away from our apartment.
I tried to time it.
So it was on fire for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. There's a moment where like I lit all the things and I'm just sitting there staring at the door waiting for him, waiting to hear your feet come up the stairs. I'm like, all right, any second now. And I keep looking over feverishly at the candles. I'm like, those are melting pretty quick.
And it just turned into one giant flame.
Yeah, sometimes they go better than others.
You're so sweet, though.
Oh, I try.
Anyway, in to keep up with that theme, we decided to cover a rom-com this episode.
Not a genre that either of us are particularly knowledgeable about.
I'm not knowledgeable about them, but I do love a good rom-com.
Yeah, we haven't watched a lot, though. We watch, obviously, we have a whole podcast where we watch movies and stuff, and it's never a genre we go to, really. Yeah, we watched, like, Love Actually that one time, not for the podcast. I'm just trying to think of any time we've ever watched romantic comedy.
We watched Love Actually under the strangest circumstances, too, because it was, like, a few weeks away from Christmas, and we were in this little cabin in Bolinas, California, which is this, like, weird peninsula community that's totally secluded from the rest of the world.
That's
and
great.
You have to take this long, winding mountain path to get there that made me violently ill.
Oh, yeah, you vomited all over the Airbnb
driveway.
As soon
as I got out of the car, I've never been more sick in my life. And what's weird is I have a pretty high tolerance for motion sickness up until that point. And then that drive just broke me completely. And ever since then, I've been very sensitive to it.
Yeah.
But it was such a unique experience because there was like wolves howling and
the frog
frogs ribbiting in the pond and all this stuff. And we were watching Love Actually on an iPad in the bed.
Laying in a bed in this tiny cabin.
And we only bought a few snacks. And for some reason, the snacks we bought were like these salami rolls.
It was great.
That was great. That movie was fine. I mean,
it's fine, yeah.
It's a Christmas, you know, there's a lot of Christmas rom-coms, holiday-themed rom-coms. And it's one of those movies that you could probably stand to watch once a year and not really pay attention to it.
But, right.
So this we chose because I would kind of consider this less a traditional rom-com and more maybe like a black comedy kind of thing. It's a Coen Brothers movie.
It's probably like the most mainstream of the Coen stuff I've seen. And we've both seen a lot of Coen Brothers stuff. But this is definitely them kind of dipping their toe into more kind of mainstream. There is definitely still some Coen Brothers wackiness.
It's a very Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, and I think we decided we wanted to do a romantic comedy. And so we did the thing we do for this podcast where we get out and like you get your Chromebook and I get my iPad. And we're just going through all the different services. Mm-hmm. Click a genre, and we're like, do we want to do, like, there's some, like, just terrible-looking ones between, like, Paris Hilton's The Hottie and The Naughty, and then there's a date movie from the Scary Movie people.
Yeah.
But then we saw Intolerable Cruelty was on HBO Go, and we like the Coen Brothers a lot, and it's Clooney and Zeta-Jones, and they're great, and, you know, the cast is awesome.
Prime Clooney and Zeta-Jones.
2003 Clooney and Zeta-Jones, yes. And so we're like, well, you know what? We looked at the reviews and heard that it was maybe one of the lesser Coen movies, but it's like, well, we really like the Coens so much.
Yeah, and I was curious to see how they would treat this kind of movie.
Yeah.
Like what a movie, rom-com with the Coen brothers treatment would look like.
Yeah, and I guess this is about what I would expect.
Mm-hmm. It was very smart and quick and, you know, like it was essentially just a battle of the wits between these two people. A gold digger played by Catherine Zeta-Jones, she's a gold digger, which is shitty, but she's like incredibly brilliant and she,
yes.
Cause she, you know, she knows what the deal is. She's just breathtakingly gorgeous, and she's able to manipulate people to get their money. And he's a very successful divorce attorney.
Yeah.
So
both of them profiting hugely off of marital strife and divorce.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Hollywood, like, they're in L.A., you know, very much just, like, playing on people. Like, Jeffrey Rush plays the super sleazy, like, TV producer, the soap opera producer. So, like, people like that, lots of trophy wife stuff and profiting off of the divorces.
Right.
So. Yeah. I think that leads to one of the things that maybe made this definitely I like this movie. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed watching it, but I definitely see why this would be considered like the lesser Coen mm-hmm. Brothers stuff, because these two characters just inherently are not relatable or likable.
Right.
You know, because they're both kind of bad people in this. Like, I know they take the turn throughout this movie, and then they realize the value of love and, you know, all this stuff, and they realize that the money's not making them happy. Like, that's the overarching theme of this, is, like, Clooney sees, like, the super elderly guy that started his law firm, and he's just, like, hooked up to tubes in a suit and just, like, repeating law terms mm-hmm. over and over. And, like, the message is pretty clear here. Like, money's not going to make you happy. Go after love. But they're bad people for most of the movie.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, like, it's just about how, like, lawyers, or some of these lawyers, are able to manipulate the situation and, like, put forth this narrative that's completely untrue. Like,
yeah.
just knowing what the truth is and rejecting it completely in favor of their clients.
Yeah.
And, you know, just taking advantage of people. And, yeah, it is hard to root for them. They're fun to watch. Mm-hmm. They're obviously completely unrelatable. I mean, both of them, just inherently, even outside of these characters, they're completely unrelatable. But you know, especially in this movie. But the whole thing is just this game that they play. You know, one's ahead of the other. They're both trying to best each other. They're both really smart. And ultimately, they just come together at the end. It's in that way, it's kind of cliche, but I will say it's much smarter than most rom-coms. There are points in the middle of the movie, like middle end of the movie, where it gets really complicated. Like, there's a lot of push and pull and a lot of legal stuff.
Yeah, a lot of figuring out who has the upper hand and, like, who's got the wealth to lose, mm-hmm. you know, like, who would benefit from this prenup, because, like, Clooney's character, Miles Massey, made this, like, bulletproof prenup that protects the wealthier party.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of, like, oh, wait, they're the rich one. They have the one to lose here.
Right.
They have more to lose. Yeah.
Right.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Yep. They did some cool scenes where, like, you referred to, like, these lawyers talking about, like, obviously going against the truth and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think the way they illustrated that was fun. Like, there's a scene early on where Clooney is talking to this woman about an impending divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically asking her what the truth is. And you just kind of see him thinking out loud, being like, oh, well, he did this. He was a philanderer and he beat you. Mm-hmm. And the woman's just being like, well, no, he didn't. And, but, like, he's just talking through, like, these obvious falsities.
Right.
And he's like, well, this is how we're going to win this thing, because he's supposed to be the super brilliant divorce lawyer.
Right.
I thought that worked really well.
Yeah. George Clooney, he plays this kind of character so well.
It's a reminder that he has a lot of range.
He does have a lot of range. I mean, he's playing a really smart, it's kind of a comedic role. But he also played a lawyer in that movie, what the fuck was the movie called? It was just, the name of the movie is just the name of the guy. I'll look it up real quick. Michael Clayton? Have you seen that
one? I've heard of that. I didn't see it.
Yeah, that's, I don't remember too much from that movie, because I think when I watched it, I was too young to really understand what was going on.
Yeah.
But I remember Tilda Swinton in that movie, and she, I know you like Tilda Swinton, so maybe you'd like this movie.
I've only seen her in Snowpiercer, and I thought she was amazing in that.
You've only seen her in Snowpiercer?
I think so. Wait, we watched Snowpiercer and Snowman so close together. It was Snowpiercer was the train one that she was in. One. Yeah, I thought she just, the way she just like, just chewed up scenery and just was so cartoonish and broad
about
everything. Yeah,
she's awesome. You've never seen like Constantine?
No.
We Need to Talk About Kevin is awesome. And a movie that I recently learned was filmed here in Stanford.
Oh, right.
That movie was super dark. She has a huge range.
Because she
has such a unique appearance.
Yes.
She's like kind of timeless. She was sleeping in a glass casket at the MoMA for like a few weeks.
You told me about this. Yeah, she was very artsy.
Yeah, she sure is. But I remember one scene of Michael Clayton, just like, actually the only scene I remember from that movie is she is in a bathroom stall just vigorously trying to wipe the sweat off of her armpits.
Oh. Before like a trial or something?
Something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clooney, I mean, he can play comedic really well. Like, this is kind of like screwball comedy. Like, there's a lot of those kind of like broad, almost cartoonish reactions to stuff. And Clooney can do that really well. He did that in Oh Brother as well.
I was going to say, tonally, this is kind of similar to Oh Brother, aren't there? I mean, it's not, obviously, it's not like an epic like that. But just in terms of like the way the humor is kind of like, like you say, like kind of cartoonish and exaggerated.
Yeah.
But like I remember the character in Oh Brother had that, was it like the Dandy Boy hair product? What was it? Dapper Dan.
Oh,
Dapper
right.
Dan, the hair. Like, that was, it's just this one little quirk about this character. Like, I noticed the Coen brothers like to do that. Like, have one weird quirky aspect about the character, especially in their more comedic movies.
Yeah, and they're really good at, like, I found that they cast character actors that have very striking, like, faces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, here, I think there's the one guy, remember when Clooney and his friend, the attorney, were talking over the defendant?
Mm-hmm.
That guy had a really striking appearance, and then Wheezy Joe, this hitman from the end of the movie, like, he's got this crazy kind of like Jaws from Bond look. And they're really good at that. Even one of the characters I liked that was just out of nowhere in this one was the Baron with the dog that shows up, and he's like the
Baron
Swiss hotel guy. Yeah.
I really liked when they were announcing him into the courtroom, like there was multiple people announcing him.
Yeah.
Like he was some kind of royalty, but he just comes out with this Pomeranian.
Yeah. And he's just very silly on the stand and basically like makes it so Zeta Jones loses the trial.
Right.
Funniest joke in the movie that made us both laugh out loud was probably when Clooney's waiting for the old man that runs the law firm, and among all the like Harvard Law magazines out front is Living Without Intestines magazine, with apparently a centerfold that we don't get to see, which the idea of that having a centerfold and the mystery of like, what the fuck would that be?
It was so funny. It was like Harvard Law Journal and all these like really super technical law books, and then just hidden underneath is this magazine, Living Without Intestines, and there's like these two elderly people just like smiling on a boat on the
intestines.
It was kind of like a moment similar to in The Big Lebowski where the guy takes that really urgent call and just scribbles something on a pad and runs away. And
it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in a movie.
Oh my god, that was so funny. And the fact that Jeff Bridges keeps that post-it in his wallet, and then when he gets caught, the police look in his wallet.
What the fuck is this?
It's just like a Price Plus card. And like
it's like three things, and they're all just like, what is this? These are your possessions.
Oh, that was so funny.
Oh,
that movie kills me.
Probably, well, okay. Favorite, I was going to say favorite comedy, but it's so good that I feel like it almost does it a disservice just to call it a comedy.
Because
it's like, it's a film. It's also just hilarious.
It is hilarious.
Favorite traditional comedy is definitely MacGruber. But it's like comparing like MacGruber and Big Lebowski. It's like they seem like two different genres. Like I feel like it'd be a disservice to either of those movies to lump them in the same category.
They're very different, but they're both really awesome movies.
Yeah. The cast in general, like the Coen brothers do such a good job. Like Clooney and Zeta Jones kill it in this.
Right.
They're both awesome at their characters. Cedric the Alexander. Wow. That's, you can tell what's been on my mind most days now. Jeez. Cedric the Entertainer. Jeez. A lot of my brain space has been taken up in a different genre of entertainment lately. Cedric the Entertainer doesn't have a whole lot to do in this. He's like a private investigator who's kind of like a comic relief in a comedy, I guess.
We were talking about this yesterday. What do you have to do to get a nickname just be part of your name? Like Cedric the Entertainer. Like, that's just who he is.
Like, that's what he's billed as.
Do you decide at one point, like, okay, I'm only going to sign my name as this? Do you legally change your name? Is the his middle name?
like, to there has to be some, like, Writers Guild or Screen Actors Guild thing where it's like, does that need to be his name to show up in the credits mm-hmm. as that?
Yeah.
But then again, like, so many actors use stage names. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's someone's stage name, like, is Tom Cruise, did he legally change his name to Tom Cruise?
Wait, like, that's not his name?
Actually, I don't know. Do you think it is? If that's too good of a name for an actor, let's look up Tom Cruise here. One second. There's no way that's just his actual
born
name.
Thomas Cruise Mapother the Fourth.
Okay, Tom Cruise is better than Tom Mapother the Fourth. Okay, I can see why he stuck with the Cruise middle name there. Yeah, I wonder, like, stage names, can you... Maybe you just have to file your stage name and then it can appear in credits?
Well, I know with, like, the SAG, I know the SAG rules are weird. Like, that's why you see a lot of actors build, like, with their middle initial or something like that.
Right.
Because I think there's a thing where, like, I don't know, I could be totally wrong about this, but I think there's a thing where, you, like, if someone already has that name, you have to, like, do a variation on it or something.
Yeah, I think there's, like Paul Thomas Anderson is the guy that did, like, There Will Be Blood and Punch Drunk Love mm-hmm. and all that stuff, Magnolia. And then there's the Paul W.S. Anderson, who's the Mortal Kombat and Event Horizon guy.
Olivia Wilde, I know that's not her name at all.
Huh. So, yeah, maybe it's just, like, in how you file with SAG or something. Mm. And he's just like, I'm Cedric the Alexander. Damn it. Wow, you can... Jeez, Cedric the Entertainer. Wow.
that's really funny.
And then you also have Billy Bob Thornton in this. In a small role, but, like, he's great.
He is great. He was in, I'm trying to think of other Coen Brothers things he did. And I think the Coen Brothers were involved in the first season of the show Fargo.
Oh, really?
And he had a big role, a really amazing role in the first season of that show.
He's a hell of an actor.
He's so good. I talk about a range. Like, he plays a goofy guy really well. He plays super creep.
Yeah.
He was amazing in, what's that movie with Halle Berry?
Oh, Monsters Ball?
Monsters Ball.
I never saw that.
Yeah, that movie's really, really dark.
Yeah, I remember the first time I ever heard of him was Sling Blade, and he got nominated for the Oscar just out of nowhere. So it's just like, oh man, I've never heard of this guy. Now he's nominated for an Oscar and everyone's talking about him.
Do you remember when he was dating Angelina Jolie and they had a vial of blood uh-huh. from each other around their neck?
Uh-huh.
And they were, like, constantly making out?
Yeah. That's the maybe the ultimate, you know how much my dad hates it when, like, athletes and stuff have attractive wives? You know, my dad gets so insanely jealous yeah. and mad. That is the ultimate. Like, anytime either Jolie or Billy Bob is brought up in conversation, he just gets, like, seething mad that Billy Bob dated her.
Why?
I don't know. He's like, well, what does she see in him? He's just this weird guy. And, like, I don't know. My dad just absolutely hates that so
what does
much.
She see in
if,
him?
If Billy Bob Thornton was a bus driver, he wouldn't be dating Angelina Jolie.
Well, I mean, yeah, they probably wouldn't have met each other.
Right, exactly. A lot of factors that go into this, Dad.
Oh, your dad is so he's funny sometimes.
He's a fascinating human being. So, yeah, he's in it just for a stretch in the middle, where he is another one of the victims of Zeta Jones.
Well, he ends up being an actor, right?
That's true. Oh, I forgot about that at the end. Yes, he is playing an oil baron to basically make Clooney think that she married into wealth and divorced mm-hmm. with a bunch of wealth. Mm-hmm. But that's just one of the many back and forth, like... You know, it's a longer play by Catherine Zeta-Jones in this
right.
to make it seem like she has money. And,
yes.
Yeah. So that's the whole last, like, third of the movie, I would say.
It's funny. Like, the way the movie treats Catherine Zeta-Jones, obviously what she's doing is really shitty. But the way they frame it is like, well, it's almost like she deserves it because she's so cunning about everything, the way she manipulates these kind of asshole dumb guys. You know
right.
what I mean? Yeah. But... And ultimately, George Clooney himself gets manipulated by her,
yes.
but he is not, you know, not easy to best, so he gets back at her, etc. Yeah, I mean, look, Catherine Zeta-Jones, she was, I feel like this was, like, early Catherine Zeta-Jones, right? I feel like this is, because she had Mask of Zorro, that,
yes.
I feel like that's the first movie that I've ever heard of
yes.
her in.
Yes, same here.
She was in this, she was in...
Entrapment.
She was in this movie called, I think it's called The Haunting or The Haunted.
Yes, I saw that several times.
I saw that movie several times,
with
too.
Jeffrey Rush.
When I was
no, that's House on Haunted Hill. That came out around the same time.
When I was a kid, for some reason, I was obsessed with that movie. I saw it multiple times as a child.
Was it Sean Bean? The Haunting. Okay, one of them had Famke Janssen. And I need to look this up, because they came out, like, the same year, and I remember I was excited for both of them. And I think I liked both of them. House on Haunted Hill was goofier. I got to look this up. Okay, The Haunting, yes. Okay, it was Liam Neeson, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Owen Wilson. That's some early Owen Wilson there. But yeah, that was 99 with Zeta-Jones. I definitely remember Mask of Zorro and Entrapment.
She was in Chicago.
Right, right.
And All That Jazz.
I have not seen Chicago.
That's all I know about.
Yeah.
And Side Effects, she was awesome in. Did you ever see the movie? It's relatively recent. Rooney Mara.
Mm-mm.
It's about, like, the side effects. It's about side effects.
Oh, okay. I feel like... You know, like, every generation seems to have their thing of, like, oh, this thing happened in their teenage years of a very sexy woman, and it's just burned into the brain. Like, the Farrah Fawcett poster mm-hmm. is that for my dad's generation. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, iconic. Mm-hmm. I feel like, for guys my age, Entrapment is pretty far up there.
I thought Famke Janssen in GoldenEye was your...
Mine.
Realization of...
That's mine, but like I'm sure that carries over for a lot of other guys too. But Entrapment, I feel, is like a generational, like any guy my age, any straight guy mm-hmm. my age that saw Entrapment or that trailer mm-hmm. is just like, whoa, there's something serious going on here.
Who else was in Entrapment?
Sean Connery.
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
It was like Master Thieves on this island, and it was Connery and Catherine Zeta-Jones. I remember being a pretty fun movie on its own, but... Catherine Zeta-Jones was memorable.
Well, as far as, rom-coms, I feel like the standard is pretty low, but this was a good, fun one. Like I said, it's really more of a black comedy. I feel like anything with the Coen brothers in it is going to, or doing something with it, it's going to be good. It's like a seal of approval. Even their really early stuff, like Raising Arizona, is so good.
I love Raising Arizona. They've just got a pacing and a sense of humor, even in their non-comedy mm-hmm. movies, mm-hmm. that I think is just so funny and... Yeah, they're incredible. You talk about range, and mm-hmm. you know, they could do a No Country for Old Men, but then they can do a Raising Arizona or Big Lebowski, yeah. more comedic stuff.
Their dialogue is so good. They don't have this like overdone presentation of things too. It's they're not putting out blockbuster like crazy action movies. It's just they're very simple presentation, and I think the dialogue is really what carries those a lot of their movies. It's just so good.
Yeah, nothing is ever saccharine or cheesy. Mm-hmm. Even with this being their romantic comedy, that's kind of one of the more mainstream movies. It never felt like cheesy. Like, it ends with the thing you would expect, where it's right. like they realize the value of love and all that, and they get together. But it's never, like, hammy. You know what I mean? Like, he does the big speech in the Vegas conference of, like, wedding lawyers and stuff, and I don't know. It all feels earned, you know?
Yeah.
So,
it's a good movie. I recommend it if you're looking for something kind of fun and romantic to watch with your loved one Valentine's Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give the Intolerable Cruelty a try.
Yeah. I had a good time watching this with you, and it makes me want to dive deeper into Coen Brothers stuff.
Oh, totally.
I looked at their filmography, and there's a lot of their movies I haven't seen.
Looking back, I feel like whenever we watch a Coen Brothers movie together, it's always seared in my mind as some kind of, like, really fun memory. Like, I remember the night we watched Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, mm-hmm. the night we watched
Lebowski,
of course, is legendary. I feel mm-hmm. like I've never laughed harder in my life.
Oh, you were just losing it the whole time. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Check out Intolerable Cruelty. It is on HBO Go/now, whatever, how that works. There's also a million HBO add-ons for Hulu and Prime mm-hmm. or whatever. Google it. You can watch it. There's ways to do it.
Well, that'll be it for this week. And as always, we want to thank everyone that helps us out on our Patreon. We keep it real simple at patreon.com/paintingthestream. We do one $5 tier that gets you an ad-free version of this podcast each and every week. And also, it entitles you to a custom-made... Direct from Bonk herself, Bonku.
That's right, Dan.
Do we have one this week?
This week, we're honoring our friend Adam.
Hi, Adam.
Hello, Adam. How are you? I hope you're well and you're enjoying this podcast, because you apparently have liked previous ones, so I hope this one lives up to your previous experience with our podcast, because I don't want you to regret supporting us. And I have this Bonku.
Weird preamble to a Bonku.
I have this Bonku for you. And I hope it brings a smile to your adorable little face.
Wow.
Couldn't Adam see? His efforts could not contain what had been unleashed.
Whoa. There you go, Adam.
Bonku for you.
That is a Bonku for you, Adam. Thank you so much for your support.
Thanks.
Thank you to all of our patrons for your support here on Painting the Stream. If anyone's got any suggestions, comments, feedback, anything like that, you can email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com. You can tweet us at PanTheStream on Twitter. Also, give us a follow there if you want to find out what we're watching the next week. Also, you can give us the old 5-star review on iTunes, Apple Podcast. That helps us quite a bit. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Bonk.
Oh, thank you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's
and
Day.
And happy day after Valentine's Day. For all the people out there that really like candy.
Yes. Happy Valentine's weekend to all, for all reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tom Monda, for the theme song.
Thanks, bro.
Thanks, Razor. You're a good boy here.
He was a very good boy.
And we'll be back next week with episode 100.
Ah!
Bye.